a really kind of like a part two of a talk I started like 9 months ago when I was here. So when I was here 9 months ago, Xie Qing and Janet asked me the question of how do you gauge some symmetries of two-dimensional topological phase of matter. I really didn't know at that time, so I thought about it and I realized that there's nothing new mathematically. I think the framework is known. It's very complicated. And Xie Qing asked me a very specific question, which is how do you gauge the non-abelian S3 symmetry of three fermions? So I think my goal is to answer that question. Okay, I almost answered it. And so basically, what I want to say is there's a well-known to expert mathematical framework to deal with this issue. And it's not true, you can always gauge the symmetry. There are obstructions. It's very complicated, and but the procedure is well-defined. So I think I worked with my colleague at Station Q. You know those guys, Mission, Parser, and Moon. So let me start. I hope this works. No? Okay, let me do this. I will talk about really bosonic topological phases. I really want to learn fermionic phases, but I just don't know yet. What I'm going to talk about basically are bosonic two-dimensional topological phases. I will pretend something called unitary modular category will characterize the phase, which is not true. You are missing at least the central charge. But as a framework, I will just say, a 2D topological phase of matter, I just mean a unitary modular category. And I think the most familiar example for people here, which gives you a very good introduction, is the toric code. So this has four anion species or anion types, and I think we all know those two are bosons. This is a fermion, and this is the ground state. An example I will focus on actually as an illustration is this abelian Trin-Simon theory with this K matrix. So these have a threefold degeneracy on the torus. There are various names. I think part of the best one is SU3 level 1. U1 level 3 is fine, but it's not quite clear what that means. But the key matrix is also a good label. And then another family of theories which we all know is the SU2 level K. This is basically the statistic sectors of the Ritter-Rosai states. The labels are given by spins. And this morning I already mentioned the semion theory, which is SU2 level 1. And then next on the list is SU2 level 2, which is not quite the Ising theory. They differ by a boson. The central charge is 3/2 for SU2 level 2, while for the Ising is only 1/2. And then another interesting theory is SU2 level 4, which have a central charge 2, which is related to 1/3, at least possibly one state there. But the one I'm most interested is this theory. So I think I already mentioned in Synthos' talk, which is a toric-code kind of a sister. So what it is it's the anion species exactly like the toric-code. And except instead of boson, boson, fermion, now you have all of them fermions. And if you know the quantum group language, so this is SO8 level 1, and have a central charge 4. Have exactly the same S matrix as the toric code, except the T matrix is different because they are all fermions. And if you like K matrix, so this will be the K matrix for you. So this is basically you take the D4 Dynkin diagram, you write down the adjacent matrices, that will give you everything you want. Okay. So the point is that all three are fermions, so you can exchange them any way you want. So there's a full non-abelian S3 symmetry. And the question really I want to address is how do you gauge this S3 symmetry? And it's extremely hard. So I don't even have the complete answer, but I will tell you at the end. So for non-abelian symmetry to be gauged, there's only one successful example, which is instead of take the three fermion theory, you can take the trivial theory. If you take the trivial theory, if you gauge the S3 symmetry, you get a double of S3, which have 8 anion species, and it's not an easy theory, actually. So this is much more complicated. So that's the target of what I'm going to do. So now let me just remind you, the obvious things we can think of. So for the abelian Trin-Simon theory, Z3 Trin-Simon theory, there's a particle symmetry. Goes from A to A bar. That's pretty obvious. And this toric code, there's this famous electromagnetic duality, which E goes to M. And then I mentioned this three fermion has E, M, and epsilon. And actually, if we think this way, it's a little bit naive. So the first thing I need to do is to tell you what do we mean by symmetry in this setting. The point is that this is like a set level thing. You just permute the particles. But the theory is very complicated. You have abradings, you have 60 symbols, and you have all those things. So you have to preserve all of those in order to be qualified to be called what is a symmetry. And so this is already a highly non-trivial thing to do. So this is the first thing I will do. So in order to do that, so let me remind you what is a modular category, which gives you a very good introduction. So just quickly, a unitary modular category, I would say, this is nothing but a quantum finite group. So what it is you have a finite set, which are just anion types. And then you can multiply them, which is called a fusion. But now it's quantum mechanics, so they're so-called superposition. It's not really amplitude, but it can translate into probability. And they have a braiding, and they have this topological twist. And there are lots of consistencies. For the fusion, you need a pentagon. For the braiding, you need a hexagon. And then these twists have a little bit of a spherical structure related to the braiding. So this is the picture. And this is always a root of unity. And then a modular theory really means that you have, well, really means that the anion species can be detected by full braidings. Yeah. So that's really modularity means. Another way to say it, you define something called transparent, which is basically, it's kind of like a boson fermion. If you do a full braiding, you see nothing with everything else. You call that particle transparent. And obviously, the ground state is transparent. For a theory to be modular, you say, well, there's nothing else transparent except the ground state. Yeah. So that's modularity means. And then there's a question already came up in the morning, which is, if you have an abelian modular category, and not only the ST matrix will determine the theory, actually, you don't even need the S matrix. So the T matrix will completely determine the theory. So there are no, this is a theorem. And in general, I strongly believe ST will determine the whole theory. You know, that it's not a mathematical theorem, but that's what I believe. For Abelian, it's a theorem. It's stronger. T will determine.
Does that you include T plus the fusion rules or just T?
Just T.
That was a question I asked earlier.
Yeah, so yeah, that's why I wouldn't ask, I wouldn't mention this without knowing you. I don't even know, but I think it's a paper by Dreamfield. So that's it's a very strong statement. So although it's very complicated, but actually they are very rare. So it's very difficult to find the unitary modular categories. So I kind of do a lot of math to classify them. So one of the theorem I'm proud of is this theorem that if you fix the anion species, there are only finite many. So there are not too many. You know, it's always a finite number. And if you list the rack, 1, 2, 3, 4, there are only 35 of them. So we can just completely list them if you only have less than 5 particle types. So for the trivial one, there's only one. And for 2 particle types, we only have semi and Fibonacci. And they have a complex conjugate of each other. So that's all. And for 3 particle types, we have this abelian transimal theory. We have the famous Ising eightfold way. And if you have this SU2 level 5, it takes the even spins. And that's it for rank 3. And for rank 4, we have the famous toric code. And I also have its sister, the 3 fermion theory here. And they have the Z4 transimal theory. And we have a Fabre cross semion. Whereas SU2 level 7 take the integral spins. And they have the double Fibonacci. So if it's less than rank 5, if you want to hunt for anions, so that's the table to look for. There's nothing else.
So you don't write double semions because it's
well, that's the double semion have the same fusion rule as this guy. It's inside here. So that's why. Okay, so now I want to give you this. It's a very difficult thing, actually. But the question is, what is the symmetry of a topological phase of matter? And it's a highly non-trivial thing. So first, let's recall what is a symmetry of a finite set. So a finite set is easy. We say, oh, the symmetry is just your permutation, any permutation you want. You know, that's the whole symmetry. So really, the full symmetry of a finite set with n elements is just a permutation group of n letters. And now you want to say a finite group G or any group is a symmetry of this set. What it really means is you have a group homomorphism from your group to Sn, and then you're acting on the set. So that's the right way to say a symmetry of a finite set. Now I have a modular category. You want to ask, what's the full symmetry of a unitary modular tensor category? And the philosophy is very easy. I will say, you go from a set to a category. That's called categorical coefficient. You lift your categorical number by one. So therefore, in order to say this, I should probably say the symmetry of a topological phase of matter in 2D or a unitary modular category will be a categorical group. So that's really what it is. So what it is the full symmetry of a unitary modular category is a finite two group. So now I can ask, you know, how do I parameterize a finite two group? And I claim a finite categorical group is parameterized by three things. By a finite group, which may be a non-abelian, by an abelian group, and by a third cohomology class with pi 2 coefficient for pi 1. Okay. So I heard that people are still struggling to learn what is group cohomology. I'm still struggling to learn what is a band insulator. So we all have our own difficulties. I have no trouble with group cohomology, but I have trouble with other things. Okay, so for those who speak the language, I will just tell you where those things come from. So these three things is a parameterization of another monoidal category. It's a tensor category. So this tensor category encodes the symmetry of this unitary modular category in the following sense. You take your unitary modular category, you ask, what's the analog of a permutation? So the analog of a permutation is something called a braided auto tensor equivalence. It's basically a map from the category to itself, but respect all the structures. And then you have two of them you can compose, and the compose defines the tensor product. And that makes it into a tensor category. And then we, you know, in this subject, you never say equal. You always say isomorphic. So then you want to say, when you do this composition, you want not equal something, you want to say isomorphic. And that's actually this pi 2 comes in. This is all the natural isomorphic between the identity function from C to itself. And that's an abelian group. And then this is a monoidal category, so you have to have the solution for the pentagons. And the pentagon solution is parameterized by H hyper 3. So that's parameterized this two group. Okay, so it's a category parameterized the whole thing. Okay, so that's what you call the symmetry of a unitary modular category. So it's a two group.
Well,
and now.
So pi 2 sometimes can be not really. I mean, if this, what occurs to the mapping of C to itself, but there's sometimes not really structure.
This is another thing which I say I want to learn. You know, when Cynthia was talking about, he said, oh, you know, I want to make things easier. I want to talk about the real symmetry, the U1 symmetry, the time reversal symmetry. And that's kind of the most difficult symmetry for me to formalize. I couldn't understand how to implement charge conservation and time reversal in this setup. That is extremely difficult. So I think for your question, in order to get pi 2 non-commutative, you have to go beyond this modular. You have to go to multi-fusion category. Because once you have the braiding. Well, the trouble is if you do anti-unitary, you have to think about suggest symbols. And it's giving you a different Z2 on the particle species. It's not necessarily the same thing as the dual particle. It's a different one. And that seems to be, my thinking is probably beyond this formalism.
Well, there's some continuous group may be difficult here.
Continuous difficult
for
too.
For finite, so.
Yeah, for finite, it's okay. But on the other hand, I don't really care too much because if this is continuous, you have to map this group pi 1, which is a finite group. But the trouble is topology. That I don't know how to handle.
Can you give an example?
I will. Okay, I will. This is what I learned. As a mathematician, we go with theory first, then example. For physicists, they go with examples first, then theory. I'm still a mathematician. Okay, so now you can ask, you know, if you have a finite group, what do you mean? This is a symmetry of a unitary modular category, okay? And the one sentence to say, oh, what you do is you put an underline of this group. So what that means, you got promoted. So this group is promoted to a category, okay? So now this is a category, the object have a group of elements, the tensor products, group multiplication, and then you say, oh, a symmetry of this thing here is a monoidal functor from this category to that category. Okay, that's the real mathematical meaning. But that's how I realized probably it's too hard for people here to unravel the definition. So you can do this way. You can say a finite group is a symmetry of your topological phase of matter if there is a real group homomorphism from your group G to pi 1. And now you have to pull back this class and it has to vanish. Okay, so that's you have to pull back vanish. And once it's vanished, it's not unique. You need to choose a further a coordinate, which is you need to choose a cohomology class in H2G with a pi 2 coefficient. And that's enough for you to specify this symmetry. Okay. So that's a topological symmetry of a unitary modular category. Okay, it's a group homomorphism pulled back to zero. And then once that's zero, you have a choice which is given by this H2. Okay, so that's a real symmetry of a topological phase of matter.
What's G underline?
G underline is a promotion of a group to a category. Okay, so this is the game we play as mathematicians. So if you have a category, you put an underline, you promote the categorical number one higher. Okay, so what it means you are, you know, like a gradient inflation. So what you do is you take G, so this is a, you know, elements multiplication. And now I put a bar, I mean this is a two category in the sense.
How do you label elements in this two categories?
Okay, there's only one object, which is a star. Okay, just pretend, okay, this is the padding. And then the group element become a morphism, as one morphism.
Okay.
And then this multiplication become tensor product. And what you gain is now when you say a map from G bar to this one, you have to preserve all the pentagons, all the hexagons, and they're not equal. And now you can introduce phase. So that's what you gain by. It's basically make this strict category non-strict. And that's what gives you all the extra structures from here.
So physically, does it correspond to some composite object elevated to?
I will say a few words. You know, that's really my colleagues are thinking how to make this YouTube. I will say when I do Beijing, I have to say I don't really know. Well, I know a lot, but I don't have a real sense of exactly how to interpret this odd structure physically.
I wonder if you interpret the pi 2 as some kind of gauge group. So this is like a symmetry after gauge transformation. I wonder whether could be interpreted that way.
Okay, I think SPT will come in, so we will see. Okay, so now let me give you examples. So let's think about abelian theories. That's the one. So as I mentioned already, abelian theory is parameterized by a pair, your particle species and the quadratic form Q, which gives you the topological spin. That's characterized the theory. And now you ask, what's the pi 1? The pi 1 is just all the permutations of the group which that's not a change, you know, you can permute the spins, okay? So this is called the orthogonal group, okay? So it's all the permutation for the group elements, and they don't, you know, the topological spin are the same. And then the pi 2 is just A, actually. Actually, it's the dual group, but for abelian, they are the same, okay? So therefore, if you have an abelian theory, the symmetry will be parameterized by a group homomorphism of your group G to this orthogonal group so that you pull back the H3 to zero. And then what you choose a mu in H2G with A coefficient. So that's parameterized all your symmetries.
So
So now let me give you the examples. So the particle symmetry is the easiest. That's why I want to work with it, which is because Z2, Z3 have no common denominators or common divisors, so all the cohomology vanish. So everything is unique. There's nothing to choose. So therefore here, the pi 1 is Z2, because that's the two have the same spin, and the pi 2 is just the abelian group, and everything else just vanish.
What is Z3? I mean, this like a lot of mistakes. I mean, you have three particles and
I would say called bosonic, you know, one third Laughlin state. You have the ground state, you have a particle, you have a hole, AA bar, and then you know the fusion rule is just multiplication of Z3. And A and A bar have the same topological twist. So that's the same theory. And if one K matrix is 2, minus 1, minus 1, 2. So this one's the easiest. There's nothing else. And now the toric code. So that's already subtle. Because for the toric code, we know pi 1 is Z2 because EM have the same spin. So we can permute them. But then we have a pi 2. And now there's a action. So if you this actually turns out to vanish, this obstruction. So now you see, because H-harper 2 with Z2 plus Z2 coefficient, I would know people will guess Z2 squared, but the point is that this action is non-trivial, so this group turns out to be Z2. Okay. So I'm saying there are two actions here, okay, distinguished by the choice here. And another example is...
So how do you get a Z2 plus Z2 for a
code? Oh, because my pi 2 is all the abelian anions in your theory. Okay, if for abelian theory, so it's just the whole particle types. It's always
so
true.
Like E squared equal to 1, that's the 1 pi 2, M squared equal to 1, give another pi
yes.
2.
Yeah, then E, the composite state is the diagonal element. Yeah.
So in general, pi 2 is just the group of all the
abelian, yeah.
Oh.
Okay, yeah, that's true. Yeah, this is for exchange this. But if you don't exchange, if you take the trivial action, this will be Z2 cross Z2. So even for the trivial action, you know, you get four possibilities already.
The non-trivial action is that the Z2 would exchange these two.
Yeah, with this two. Yeah, that's this action here. That cut down to, so. And this is even more complicated. I don't even know that answer is right or wrong. But here, you have S3 symmetry. This vanished, and H-harper 2, I'm guessing that's the answer. Okay. So I cannot compute anything. I have to ask my daughter to do any programming for me. So that's the full contents of symmetry, how to parameterize them. So now what I want to do is I want to show you how to gauge those things. I can do all of them. But I will start with this example because this is have no choices to be made. And then I will tell you how I will do this one. That's the exercise I got from here 9 months ago. Okay, so now let me claim, this is a big claim. So I claim you can gauge a symmetry in two steps. And there's an obstruction for you to do that, which means not every symmetry can be gauged. Okay? So the thing you do is you start your theory C with a G symmetry, which is parameterized by this pair, if it's abelian. Okay? And now you want to get is another theory. So that means in my 2D case, you want to get another unitary modular category. And now you ask, what's the process? It's two steps. The first thing you do, you add flux to each particle before. Okay? So now you extend this to a category which has flux. So this is called extended category. And there are structures here, which is, this is the part I have a hard time to commit, which is how to interpret this category physically. Should I interpret this as domain walls, or should I interpret this as twist defects? But I think mathematically, each sector should be considered a domain wall between C. It's a transparent domain wall between C. So the first step is, you add flux sectors to your original theory to get something called modular. Now it's not a modular category, it's a G cross category. So I'll explain what that means. And in order for you to do this, there's an obstruction in H4 of your symmetry group with the U1 coefficient. And you can ask where this comes from. It's very easy to say. It's come from this has to satisfy the pentagons. In order to solve the pentagons, you need something to vanish. And that's exactly capture that thing. Okay. So if this vanish, and then you can solve the pentagons for this. And if this not vanish, and then you're out of luck. You cannot gauge it.
So you mentioned if it's not vanished, would it still be realized on a boundary of some high dimension?
I think it's very likely you can now make this into the boundary of a four something, but I don't know how to do it.
Like a 3D boundary.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, then you will make this into the 2D thin bound or bulk or something. Probably will capture this. The trouble is, I'll ask expert, there's no way for you to compute this obstruction except to solve the pentagons. So this is very difficult to understand this thing. You know, basically, it's an operational thing. You just solve the pentagons, you realize there's obstruction. So now let's assume this vanished. You do have solution to pentagons. And then the claim is, you want to further solve for a G cross hexagon. And the claim is there's no further obstruction. You're free to have the so-called G cross braiding. So you get this intermediate step. And the next step is, once you have this extension, the next step is you do acularization, which means you take invariant orbit. I'm pretty sure this is called orbit folding. But the thing is, I don't even know what orbit folding means in physics. But this is close related. So basically, from here, for this step to here, I think it's orbit folding. Every element. No, it's a cohomology class. This obstruction O depends on the symmetry. Oh, I don't know. You want to say, yeah. Is every element here non-zero come as obstruction of something? I have no idea. So the best expert in the world told me, either you solve the pentagon, or all we know is when G is cyclic, it's always vanish. And that's no other knowledge on this group.
If you can say that for every element there is some obstruction, that seems to suggest that every obstruction corresponds to a surface state of some.
It's possible, but I have no idea what that. So, okay, so that's the procedure I will carry out. So just as a trivial observation here, if C is trivial, and then you can take any group, finite group as symmetry, and then this step is basically giving you the so-called G-graded vector space, and then you do orbit folding, you get a quantum double of the finite group. So this is basically free SPT pieces of this story. So now I will illustrate this procedure by using the Z3, because everything is unique. Okay, so first, let me tell you a little bit about this modular G cross category. This is making me really excited. So we have to add this flux sectors. And then you get a theory has two structure. One is the grading. Okay, so you have a flux G, and if you fuse with flux H, you get flux G multiply H. And the second thing is there's a G action. The G is the symmetry of the neutral sector. This when G is the identity element, that's just your original theory. This action extended to the whole thing. And if you have H sector, that is sent to G conjugate. Okay, so you permute them. So this two should be compatible. Another beautiful thing is, before you can have such theory, they have no braidings. You know, they are not braided. But now there's a new notion of a braiding. It's called G cross braiding. And this is related to twist defects. If you have two defects, and if you braid them, and in this new case, because of the flux, this particle change according to this action. Okay, so you go from x tensor y, now it goes to y tensor x, it goes to something else. And that's giving new freedom for the hexagons, and then you can solve more theories. So I will show you the example. And then what you can do is you can extend the Wallinder algebra to something called extended Wallinder algebra. So now, instead of before I have only one sector corresponding to one one, and now for every pair of commuting objects, you get a sector for the Wallinder algebra. So you get a bigger Wernicke algebra. And you can define the extended ST matrix, et cetera, et cetera. So it's all extended to this new setup.
I
think in other language it's twisting, which is this action here. Yeah, that's the twisting.
Exactly.
Yeah. But then there's this grading here too. So there are two structures here, the grading and the twisting.
Yeah, because it sounds like there's this whole paper by Dijkgraaf.
Yeah, they did the trivial case. They did the S3 acting on the trivial theory. They get the double of S3.
Okay.
They call holomorphic orbit only.
So if you consider, if you ignore the group action, this graded category would be the multi-fusion category.
Not necessarily multi-fusion. It depends on your trivial sector. In my setting, the trivial sector is always a modular category, so it's not multi. So multi means the identity object is not a particle.
Yeah.
But here I do insist the ground state is a particle type. So this is the new structure. And now I want to do the Z3 case. I think I have enough time. So now let's do the Z3 case. So the symmetry is Z2. So I have two sectors. And you have the neutral sector, which is just the original category. And they have the twisted sector. You can argue there's only one twist defect in there. And the fusion rule would be the twist factor fused to itself will come out with the 1 AA bar. We go back to the neutral sector. And now because of H3 Z2 U1 Z2, so there are two possibilities here for you to choose. And then if you take the quotient, which means you gauge, and the result will be either SU2 level 4, or you will get its cousin, which is the Jones-Kaufman theory at R equals 6. Okay. So that's these two cohomology class which we are specified. And the difference between the two is the spin half particle. One has so-called Frobenius-Schur indicator equals -1 for that theory, and for this one has 1. So that's what it is. And to give you more detail of this, so here's what you do. So if you take the Z3, you add a twist defect, and you get something called a Tambari-Yamagami category. It's a well-known theory that is not braided. And you can write down all the 6-gear symbols. And the 6-gear symbol is given by something called symmetrical bicharacter, which means it's a map from the group Z3 cross Z3 to U1, and you fix one variable is multiplicative. Okay, that's a bicharacter, it's a symmetric. And that solves all the pentagons. And then you try to solve the hexagon, there are no solutions. But now if you solve using this new notion of G cross, and you will get a solution. Okay, so this will become G cross braided. And then you can compute the extended ST matrix. There are 4 sectors here. This is the old ST matrix. And now you have this new interest. They go beyond between sectors. And if you multiply them together for 60 degrees, you get this famous presentation of SL2Z. So it all works out exactly as before. OK, so now let me finally give the answer to the exercise.
So this kappa can be chosen.
The kappa is plus or minus 1. There are no choices. It's only plus or minus 1. Oh, this is forward. It's plus or minus 1. OK, so now I can give you the general theory. So the first thing is that the number of defects in each sector exactly given by the fixed points. And the second statement is if you take the defects in a fixed flux sector, if you add their quantum dimension squared, that's exactly as the neutral sector.
Okay.
They're exactly the same. And then when you gauge, you get a unitary modular category, and that always contains a subcategory, which is Rf g. And the total quantum dimension is always given by the theory you gauged, and then multiply the order of the element squared. And the topological central charge are always the same. So that's always like the orbit folding. And now you can say, how do you carry this process? No, I cannot. Nobody knows really how to solve pentagon. So there's only one example, Z3, I can carry through. So how do I know how to gauge this 3 fermion theory? Unfortunately, there's an inverse process. That's how you argue. So what is inverse is mathematics called de-equivalentization. So I think physics means condensing. So what you can do is you can condense wrap G, and then you will get something with the G crossed, and you will recover your original theory with a group action. And this is the inverse of each other. It's a mathematical theorem. So you can go, it's easier to, so the procedure we are doing is we start with a theory with a symmetry, we guess what it is, and then we find this subcategory, we condense it, and then we got our original theory back, and then by this mathematical theorem, that's it, because they are inverse of each other. And ideally, we should carry through this, but only one theory we can do. Okay, so now let's do the challenging one, the three fermion theory. I can do many of them. I know the answer, but not the most interesting. So now let's do three fermion. So what you do is you take S3, this is a semi-dual product of Z3 with Z2, and you first gauge the Z3. You ask which theory do you get, and you guess. And with all the knowledge I have, I come with SU3 level 3. And then I discover SU3 level 3, there's a Z3 in there. I condense it. I get back to my original theory. So now I prove this is the result. And now I want to do a further Z2 gauging. And SU3 have a Z2 symmetry, which I will show you in the next slide. And I analyze it. I realize the ending result will have 12 anion species. And this is the quantum dimension. Okay. And for those who know representation theory, this is representation theory of S4. And S3 is in there. So I think I'm right on time. So I think, so let me just tell you one subtle point, which is, so this is what you get by gauging Z3. Now I want to gauge Z2. So SU3 level 3 is a very famous theory. It's the first integral theory. All quantum dimensions are integer, but they are not representational groups. So this is genuinely quantum. And the 10 particle type is given by the Wave diagram SU3 level 3. So those are the 10 particle types. And this yellow one is the one with dimension 3. And this is the fundamental the dual. And the Z2 action just reflects from this axis. And if you gauge this thing here, you need to know what's the Z2 action on this Hom space. If you know the fusion rule, if you fuse those two, you get those three, and then twice of this one. And this action is non-trivial. It's highly non-trivial to show that's two. And once you know this, then you can carry out the analysis. So, anyway, so that's all I want to say. I want to do one more thing, which is to advertise a workshop I'm organizing. It's a beautiful resort. We have still a few slots, but people are interested. What? The deadline? Or anyway, so I just want to advertise in case people are interested. So I think I will stop here. Thanks for your attention. I think, you know, I think people most familiar with is the Ising theory. You know, I can analyze that one completely. And yeah, there are, you know, basically any theory, you know, well, yeah, I have quite a few. So if you take the ZN transimon theory, take the particle hole, and if you gauge, you will get the so-called double of Tambari-Yamagami theory. If you gauge this one of the electromagnetic duality of the double of ZN, well, the ZN gate theory, you get something called the double of SON level 2. And there is a famous, the double of S3, there's a CF theory, with CF symmetry, which is discovered by Peter Shor. And if you get this one, you get SU 2 level 4 across this bar. And then you have any two layer, there's a C2 symmetry. You know, the most interesting one is this one. If you take Fibonacci two layer, you exchange the Fibonacci anion, you get SU2 level 8. So there are lots of, you know, you can do.
So here the symmetry is always some kind of a symmetry of a statistics. You can move the anions, but statistics don't change.
Yeah.
And then you try to gauge that kind of
yeah.
symmetry. So that's kind of
I cannot gauge the real symmetry. Because the real symmetry cannot be implemented in this way. At least I don't know how to implement.
I see. So this symmetry always has a non-trivial action on any
action. No, you don't have to have non-trivial action on any. You can take the trivial action, that's fine too.
Oh, I see.
But it has to be in this framework.
To understand it from, say, a simple lattice model, suppose I have three fermions. So I have three types of fermions hopping.
Okay.
And I know how to put link fields.
Well.
And then, are you looking for possible link fields? And what is it?
Okay, let me say a question to all the people here who love lattice model. It's unknown how to implement the EM symmetry on a lattice without cheating. In the sense of how do you implement E and M, you take your lattice model, you shift by half lattice side. So that means the symmetry is realized on two different lattices. I really believe you cannot do on a single lattice. You know, I asked Kitaev Alexei, I said, do you know how to implement? He said, no. I think probably you cannot do it, but that still would be nice to know. So basically I'm saying the topological symmetry I have is probably has no lattice realization on a single lattice. So therefore, that discussion has to be modified as to. Well, you can do continuous thing, but then. Yeah, there's not lattice anymore. So I'm saying, this is, I believe it's a deep question, which is, I call topological symmetry make up the word because I don't want to confuse you with real physics. And there's another subtlety here. Just one more. So I want to mention another question, which is the symmetry, we are thinking of the symmetry at the wrong place. So what you really should think is the symmetry should be a symmetry of the Hamiltonian. And then the symmetry is promoted to the excitations of the outcome. So I shouldn't talk about symmetry on this modular category. Just take example, take level wave model. The symmetry should be on the input rather than on the output. I'm cheating by going to the output. So there are lots of real things which I really don't know.
Yeah, if you assume a group have a trivial action, then you can use any group.
Yeah, then you can use
and
any.
And then
it's basically you stuck SPT onto your theory.
Oh,
so there's nothing interesting to
so
discuss.
In that case, there's no you cannot.
There are no, yeah, there's nothing. It just basically you say every time you gauge. You're free to attach SPT on it, There's nothing wrong with that.
But we know examples where attaching an SPT doesn't change the phase.
Depends on what you mean by, probably depends on what you mean by different phase. So the thing here is, you take a G symmetry on the trivial theory. When you gauge, you get a quantum double of this symmetry. In that sense, I'm saying, this is a different theory because when you gauge, like I think I should acknowledge is Michael and Zhong Cheng, I think, started this whole discussion about gauging symmetry. I don't know the history. But the thing is, in that sense, I would say they are different. The actions are different. But you might have a different meaning of phases.
I think oftentimes when you're attaching SPT, before you're attaching, after you're attaching, you gauge.
I think they commute it.
Isomorphic theory.
Before you attach, after you attach. Okay, I have to ask you what that means, but I think it's just split off as a separate thing. There's no, interaction between other things. It just add on. I'm saying it's always there. You always have this freedom to do it. I'm saying.
The question is whether it changes your result.
Actually, I didn't answer that question. I don't really know what that means.
So in the case where I know how to gauge symmetries,
yeah.
The resulting quantum dimension, total quantum dimension, is the product of the gauge theory dimension.
Oh, that's inside. Yeah, that's inside.
So is that natural? Is it automatic or trivial or just not right?
It's true. That's this statement here, right?
Okay, I see.
Yeah, I would almost say it's automatic. The point is that this theory inside here, and then what you can do is this theory always split into a so-called weird product, which is this theory, and then it's commutant. And then that just means in terms of quantum dimension, just a product.
But this works even for non-abelian dimension?
Oh, for any, yeah, for any. So it's just part of the theory. And that also shows the top particle central charge won't change.
So let's thank the speaker.